Hello, welcome to The Debate. I'm Kavita Thakwe. The United States takes pride in sanctioning countries. This is particularly true when it comes to Iran. Today, November 4th, the U.S. formally announced its biggest sanctions on Iranian entities like energy and banking sectors. It says that it wants to bring Iran to the negotiating table. In their eyes, will it work? Or should the question be, have sanctions worked in the past? Well, those are just a couple of the questions we'll be asking in this edition of The Debate. Before that, let's get an update from Press TV's Jerome Hughes, correspondent there in Brussels, on the latest European reactions to the U.S. sanctions. Well, Jerome, at this point, tell us the latest reactions that you have from EU, in particular, any officials.
Well, Kav, there's no doubt this is definitely dominating the news agenda here, over the last 24 hours, and even on the build-up to this new ramping up of sanctions from the United States. The U.S., of course, is boasting about the new sanctions. But the feeling here in the European Union is that the United States is becoming more and more isolated because, of course, world powers, including a few that are located in the European Union, and the international community are very much in favor of the Iran nuclear deal. And so Trump is definitely isolating the United States in this regard. Now, we had the daily media briefing given by the European Commission today, and we expected to hear, the official line from the European Union. In fact, the spokesperson refused to say anything. He wouldn't answer any questions in relation to the United States sanctions. And I think that's because the EU was kind of waiting to see how the dust would settle. And also, we were expecting to hear about the countries that would be exempt and so on. And we have more information on that. But in addition to that, we have, right as we speak, we have the 19 finance ministers from the Eurozone, they're meeting. There'll be a press conference in the coming hours. And of course, this issue will be raised and discussed at that. And we will get more official lines from the EU ministers in that regard. And then we have the 28 ministers, the entire sort of EU ministers meeting tomorrow, Tuesday. And then they will have a press conference. We'll get more information and more sort of news lines from that. And then we have the foreign affairs ministers, the EU foreign affairs ministers meeting on Monday. So as you can see, where I'm going with that is that over the next coming days, we'll get a more official position from the European Union. You might remember a couple of months ago, I was asking the EU's top diplomat, Federica Mogherini, about this whole thing coming up in November. And she was saying, look, we don't know whether or not the EU can save the JCPOA. We're just trying our best. But at the time, interestingly, she made it very clear that she felt there was no coincidence between the fact that the sanctions were going to be announced now, right ahead of the US midterm elections. So there's a certain amount of cynicism, a great deal of cynicism here in the European Union in relation to Donald Trump's motivation. No doubt, though, he is definitely isolating the United States in this regard. Whether or not the mechanisms that the EU has been putting in place and continues to put in place, whether or not they will be effective and whether they can save the JCPOA, Iran nuclear deal, that is something we are going to have to see over the coming weeks and even over the coming months.
Very well. Thank you very much for that. We appreciate that. That's Jerome Hughes talking there. Our guest joining us from San Francisco is Richard Becker from the Answer Coalition. Richard Becker, welcome. Our correspondent there mentioned the timing of this sanctions imposed by the U.S. against Iran, and that it has perhaps something to do with the midterms, and that that is no coincidence. Do you agree with that? Is that how you see it?
Well, it can't have been a coincidence. I mean, I've known for a very long time that the election was going to be on November 6th in this year, in 2018. So, of course, it was no accident. How much of impact that actually has on the election, I'm very dubious of, because I don't think that's what people are thinking about in the United States is, oh, great, here we go, let's punish Iran some more. I mean, the hardcore extreme right wing of the Trump base is for this, of course, and they like it. And Trump has pronounced that he's not a globalist, he's a nationalist. And globalist is a phrase, is a term of the extreme right wing. So Trump is going forward with this and trying to underline, as the as Election Day approaches tomorrow, the most extreme parts of the program, the most racist, backward, xenophobic aspects of the program in regard to the caravan in Mexico, in regard to Iran, in regard to the whole world. So I think that's the reality of the situation with the imposition of this new round of sanctions.
Well, first of all, maybe we should ask you a very basic question that maybe is somewhat overlooked, and it's a very simplistic one, and that is, why is the U.S. sanctioning Iran in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, that's a question that should be asked, and it's not asked in the United States nearly enough. In the mainstream media and mainstream political discourse, there's an assumption that what the United States does is right, it's justified, it's moral, and the disagreements are whether or not it's pragmatic, if it's practical to do. But, you know, the reality here in the United States, for most people who rely on the mainstream media for their news, is a reality that's turned upside, it's a reality turned upside down. It's not Iran that is victimizing the United States. It's Iran that has been victimized by the United States. And we go back to 1953 and the coup that took place there, and the imposition of an extremely brutal government trained at the highest levels, the SAVAK, its secret police, its torturers, trained by U.S. Political police officials and military officials. You know, we can go right up to the Iran-Iraq war, where the U.S. hoped to destroy Iran, and I think also hoped to destroy Iraq in the process too, but particularly targeting Iran for an eight-year war, shooting down an Iranian airliner, killing all more than 250 people aboard in 1988. And, you know, this has gone on, and then the sanctions that were imposed in 2010 that Hillary Clinton worked so hard on putting into place undoubtedly caused great suffering. Can be no denying great suffering for the population. And when these economic sanctions are imposed, they always are in reality targeting the population, the masses of people, the civilian population, in the vain hope that, you know, that will cause them to rise up against and overthrow the government that the United States wants to replace.
Very well. Let me introduce Maxine Dover. She is a journalist and political commentator who joins us from New York. Maxine Dover, welcome. Here we are. Now the sanctions are in full effect, as the U.S. would like to think. Of course, our guest there was talking about how sanctions at this point maybe it's something Iran has experienced, so maybe it's not going to have that effect that the U.S. wants. And of course, many of the critiques of the sanctions said that they are, in a sense, self-defeating, that this basically is disempowering in Iran people who want to actually work with the West and want to work with the U.S. in particular, that diplomacy with the U.S. perhaps just doesn't work. Is this one of the things that the sanctions may do?
These are the most interesting sanctions that have ever been put in place. There are eight major exceptions. Eight countries where their trade is still allowed within the realm of the sanctions. It's a sanction that invites subtle running around the edges. Companies that have branches in any one of the eight countries that are allowed to work with Iran likely to make use of those connections. That the people of Iran have a desire to work with the West is a wonderful and positive thing. And it's a positive thing not just for the West, certainly, but for the people of Iran and for future developments of Iranian government. The pressure that the sanctions will put on will unhappily drift down to the population. And I think that the last 2 years have shown that there is enough activity in the streets of Iran, even before the imposition of the sanctions, when the sanctions were in fact lifted, that the government needs to recognize the needs of the people, and the government needs to respond to those needs. And one of the major responses that the government can do, and I think will influence the West to reconsider the imposition of the sanctions, is in fact Iran's activity in encouraging terrorism, in terrorism in the Middle East, terrorism in response to the government in Yemen. And if there is a more mature development of diplomacy that can say, wait a minute, who's benefiting from the terrorists except the arms sales people and a couple of leaders who are sitting in their palaces, wherever those palaces may be, many of them not near the activities of the terrorists on the ground. That could be one aspect that pressure from the Iranian people could cause to happen. The fact that the eight governments, eight major countries, have been allowed to continue trade with Iran sort of takes the bottom out of these sanctions. I had the interesting experience of listening to John Bolton last night and of listening to his response to the fact that the sanctions were about to be put into place 2 hours after he spoke. And the words of John Bolton were not an attack against the Iranian people. They were an attack against government actions and what this administration understands to be noncompliance.
When you talk about John Bolton, we can't disregard the fact that he has appeared at a terrorist organization by the name of MKO. I'm not too sure how much standing and weight we can give John Bolton, Maxine Dover. But what I would like to ask you is this. You throw about a phrase or this image of Iran promoting terrorism, which is pretty much verbatim of what the U.S. has said.
Well, it's not only the U.S. that has said it. Okay. It's not only the U.S. It's the fact that the Iranian forces are training Syrian forces. It's the fact that Iranian weaponry is found in rockets thrown at Israel. It's the fact that the Iranian government calls for the destruction of the state of Israel. That's terrorism. And that's not feasible in the real world of 2018. And that is something that needs to be negotiated out of existence. The idea of calling for the destruction of a state, a member state of the UN, is just pure terrorism.
Iran is not calling for the destruction of Israel. The last time I checked, that is not true. However, let's move beyond that.
What does death to Israel written on a rocket mean?
Excuse me?
When a rocket carries the message, death to Israel, or what does that mean?
It's that could be construed as being something symbolic. Obviously, Iran does not recognize Israel in terms of the way that it's conducting itself against Palestinians. But again, this could be, we're not going to take a side road here. We'd like to focus on the issue at hand, and these are the U.S. sanctions. Richard Becker, there's a preconceived notion by the U.S., as it has stated, of course, the Secretary of State, Michael Pompeo, said that we have told Iran about the 12 conditions that need to be met. But there's a preconceived notion from the U.S. that, you know, we want to bring Iran to the negotiating table. Why does it think, first of all, that sanctions will do that to Iran? How does it think that by doing exercising these sanctions, which they say are the worst or the most severe in Iran's history, that it's going to bring Iranian officials to the table?
Well, let me just comment on your other guest statement about Iran training forces inside Syria. The United States has trained forces all over the world, and they're particularly Saudi Arabia, not only training them, but providing them with bombs and planes and mid-air refueling in order to carry out a terrorist war against the people in Yemen. And that's going on day in and day out. So I think your other guest has a very, very limited and one-sided view. What Pompeo wants to do, what Trump wants to do, is different than the rhetoric. They're saying, well, they want to come to the negotiating table, but they're producing 12 conditions before Iran has to meet, before there can be negotiations. There's no intention to having negotiations. There just were negotiations that resulted in the JCPOA a very short time ago. So that's not really what they want. What they want is to bring about regime change in Iran. That's what the idea is. And I would say that you can see by the fact that it's not just sanctions of the United States trade with Iran, but that it's a global effort to get every government in the world to cut off its trade with Iran. And to use, and it really, It's a thug administration in Washington. It's a thug administration engaging in thug-like tactics, particularly against weaker countries, and threatening them and saying to them openly, you can either trade with the United States of America or you can trade with Iran. Make your choice. That's an extortionate threat. That's a terrorist threat that's being carried out against many countries in the world. It's the same thing that the United States does. Embassies all over the world intervene in those countries to try to prevent trade with Cuba. This is a tried and perfected strategy by the United States. And you can't see it as any different than the infringement on the sovereign rights, not only of Iran, but the sovereign rights of all those countries where these kind of threats are carried out against companies and governments if they dare to trade with countries that the United States has marked as being supporters of anything the United States doesn't like, the United States government doesn't like.
Okay, Mike Sinover, I have to mention this to you because Iran has had one of the reactions since the sanctions came in, and this has to deal with the way that the U.S. has actually exercised itself when it came to countries wanting to do business with Iran, in which the U.S. has threatened those countries, saying, hey, you may also bear the brunt of sanctions. And Iran is saying, you know what, there was a deal that was set, there was a U.N. resolution, and here it's the U.S. who backed out and is asking countries to break that U.N. resolution, which is deemed illegal. Don't you think that that in itself is, at a minimum, setting a very bad precedent in terms of law and order in the world?
The fact that the United States has left exceptions to those who will be hindered by the sanctions is perhaps, as I said earlier, the most interesting part of this imposition of old sanctions, if the reimposition of old sanctions. I agree that the partners in the JCPOA have a stand. And the fact that this administration has acted independently and acted unilaterally, leaving behind its partners, certainly makes those partners, I would expect, question the validity of a negotiated agreement. That this administration sees the imposition of sanctions as a mechanism of pulling Iran to the negotiating table is its interpretation. On a worldwide basis, on a basis of seeking a more peaceful world, one would hope that there would be a little bit of a give, just to get to the negotiating table, and then to really start working on a negotiated JCPOA or its inheritor that can be acceptable both to Iran and the United States and to the partners. The partners are major partners in this agreement. This is not any kind of a situation that can actually be acted upon unilaterally.
We need to, Brian Becker, ask your impression of how the EU in particular and other countries who are supporting Iran, how they are going to proceed from here on. I mean, the EU itself comprised of many countries, the UK saying that, you know, we're going to try in one way or another not only save the deal, the JCPOA, the nuclear deal, but we're also going to try to conduct business with Iran in any which way possible. Of course, there's some mechanisms that the EU wants to put in place. China and Russia have stated their positions very clearly also. A number of countries have. As a matter of fact, there are many countries who are behind Iran when it comes to the way that the U.S. has acted with its withdrawal. Do you think that, for example, Trump not exempting the EU was a message directed exactly at the EU that you got to follow our lead when it comes to Iran?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. That the Trump administration policy, the overall foreign policy, is one based, as he has said himself, on nationalism. And it's not that that's something really new, but just that he's openly saying that is really showing disdain for a relationship with what have been the U.S. partners, as they call them, in NATO. Of course, they're always competitors as well as partners. But You can see, and the fact that today, when they made the announcement that sanctions were being implemented, you know, you had Pompeo, but then you had Mnuchin, the Secretary of the Treasury, and that's really, in many ways, the enforcement arm. The Treasury Department is the enforcement arm of the sanctions, and in the past has inflicted huge fines, excuse me, on banks and corporations that dared to defy the sanctions that the United States government, not on a multilateral level, but just the United States government, was declaring sanctions against the country and then inflicting fines, huge fines, sometimes billions of dollars, on banks that continued to do business or to facilitate business with Iran, with Cuba, with other countries that were on these lists. And it's really, again, it's that is due to the power of the United States in the world financial markets, not due to anything that has to do with justice or seeking democratic change or anything like that, and not respecting the national sovereignty of those countries, but merely insisting and going forward with actions based on the domination of the U.S. in world financial markets.
Very well. Unfortunately, we're out of time. I wish we had more time to discuss this. The Answer Coalition, Richard Becker there from San Francisco, and Maxine Dover, thank you.
Thank you.
Political commentator and journalist who spoke to us from New York. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From Mikhail Vitale, my entire team in the capital, Tehran, is goodbye.